Hi everyone! Welcome to another episode of the Dublin Maker Podcast. I am your host, Vicky Tumili. Dublin Maker is an annual maker festival funded by Science Foundation Ireland. In this episode, we have Rob Fitzsimons from Talk Hackerspace. We also have Jeffrey Rowe from Dublin Maker Team co-hosting with me at this episode. So welcome, Rob. It's great to have you on our podcast.
Hi, Vicky. Hi, Jeffrey.
Welcome.
So I only see you every so often in Talk. I'd like to kind of know more about what you do for me and for the Smiths as well.
Yeah, I'm one of the founding members of the Talk Hackerspace in Dublin, along with Jeffrey and a whole bunch of other makers from around Dublin. We founded the group in 2009, so we're just over 11 years old now.
Whoa.
The Talk Hackerspace group came out of a 2600 group, which myself and Jeffrey and another bunch of kind of more InfoSec type people had been involved in for probably close to 20 years now. I think I've known Jeffrey probably 15 years, 16 years.
Whoa. What's a 2600?
2600 is a group that meets up around kind of traditional hacking and InfoSec type community. We meet up every Friday, the first Friday of the month, for effectively 20 years. You know, we used to meet outside of Tower Records on Wicklow Street, and now we meet up near the Molly Malone statue on Andrew Street.
Yeah, just the tourist office, isn't it?
Yeah, just near where the tourist office is. And we basically meet up. It's a kind of whoever shows up at the 7 o'clock. We hang out for about 30 minutes and then we usually go and find somewhere for food, to have a chat and probably go on to for drinks later in the evening. But as I said, we've been doing that for close for 20 years. The lockdown phase where we've been doing it online, but at the meetings people would talk about the hacking kind of news of the last month or so, or if they had a new toy they would talk about that, like software defined radios. I used to bring kind of some of my electronics projects and stuff I was working on, and then we heard some of our members had gone to some of the hacking conferences that happen around the world, particularly the German Chaos Communication Congress conferences that have been going on. And we kind of collectively decided to go as a group. In a sense, like we do with the maker fairs, you kind of go individually, but you kind of hang around with the group over time. So I think it was about 8 of us that year went. It was a 25C3 in Berlin. So that was in the CCC events happen in December. So from the 27th to the 31st, they have a hacking conference, big massive hacking conference, nearly tens of thousands of people attending. And we all kind of got tickets and made our way to Berlin, kind of stayed in similar hostels at the time. And we went and it was in the, what was it? The BCC, the Berlin
Convention Center.
So we went there, went to some of the talks that were on, hang out with some of the hardware hacking area, like the likes of Mitch Altman, and just hanging out, soaking up the experience, talking with lock pickers or doing lock picking, going to talks. And then I'm not sure where we heard about the hackerspace, the phraseology or whatever. I know there was a talk there, but I'm pretty sure I didn't go to it. Though we probably did go to Seabase at some point, but I think I went for effectively a disco. on the last night or something. I don't remember going.
It must be a good night.
it's kind of interesting, like, that having, you know, run a hackerspace for over 10 years, my first experience of going to hackerspace was not anything like our hackerspace or any real hackerspace I've participated in at all. But something about the phrase or the name or what I gleaned, you know, this is what I wanted us to have in Dublin.
We
had talked at our 2600 meeting about doing some things in person, you know, or maybe renting a room somewhere, or, you know, doing some sort of physical activity. A lot of my hacking tend to be a bit more physical, with radios or with electronics. So having some physical place to do some of this hacking was desirable. And so I kind of think of it more like that. The phrase was a neutralization point, you know, the thing crystallized just by having the name.
So back then, was there any kind of any places that you would have thought it might be a good, like, you know, before TOG happened, just before you found it, was there anywhere you can say, oh, we could have just, you know, found a space and did a bit soldering here or talks here? Or was just like really difficult to find, or was just going to other people's places and take part there?
Well, we did do, I was involved in the Dublin Cycling Campaign quite actively at the time, and we used to have meetings in, there's a religious on Ainger Street. I can't remember the Carmelite Center or something. There was a center there that we used to host our meetings. And so one of the first TOG related events is, I think we rented a room there to do some non-pub based kind of activity. As we all know, most social events in Ireland tend to happen around the pub.
Well, the ideas sprout from that, really, you know, getting a bunch of people, you know, discussing things is a great idea. And it sprouts from there. But I know that some ideas get seeded from, depending what you went, like, for you when you went to Berlin, you know, the idea has seeded there, but kind of sprouted even more so.
I knew we needed somewhere physical. And I when I kind of did the founding email of the TOG, when it went out to the public, it's kind of saying I wanted it to be something that was different to the pub culture that, you know, the 2600 had been going for, or the Dublin Cycling Campaign, or, you know, it's something a little bit more than that. I also knew it needed to be much more diverse than the 2600 grouping, you know, so we wanted it something different, and kind of picking neutral venues and a drink neutral venues was important, but not critically so. You know, we did have some meetings, I think, in pubs as well. I think we used to meet in the Alexander Hotel, Ginger Man, a few times. It was just without having a physical space, you just have to make do what's available.
Yeah, I hear you. DIT
hosted us, I think, at some point as well. We did the OSS Bar Camp, I think, twice.
Those were super cool.
Related to the TOG founding. But the fact that there was a group of us that had known each other for, like, potentially 10 years before that, you know, most of the people that attended the 2600 came over and joined this TOG hackerspace idea and started putting money down fairly quickly, within like 2 or 3 meetings, you know, meeting every 2 or 3 weeks. So we had revenue. We were able to then start. So yeah, we had a kind of a membership fee before having a physical space. And that meant we had a reserve, so that when we started looking for our first premises, we were actually able to almost be a cash renter. You know, it's not like we found a place, how do we pay for it? It's kind of, this is how much money we have. Let's find ourselves something within that budget. I think we were probably in the midst of our, you know, the last big recession. So I think properties were potentially a little bit easier to come by, which was helpful to kind of bootstrap. So we had our first, I think, meeting in January 2009, and then we moved into our first premises in, I think, June 2009, or was it May 2009?
May, I believe.
Yeah, it was May. Yeah, you're right, it's May. And at that time, I think we were one of the quickest hackerspaces to get going, you know, effectively 5 months from, you know, kind of first public announcement to, you know, having our own keys. And we stayed then in Arran Quay, was it for 2 years?
Yeah, I think it was about 2 years.
2 years in Arran Quay. And then we kind of grew slowly, and then we were in premises on Chancery Lane, Tug 2.0 for 5 years. Must have been about 5 years. And then we're now in the Black Pits area of Dublin.
We've grown so much since. Like
Steady growth. In comparison to other hackerspaces that we know, we've grown very, very slowly. But we have sustained.
I think there's a
stubbornness in some of the kind of core group that isn't going to allow it to fail easily.
But it's so important though to, you know, we've probably, like, I definitely seen like hackerspaces around Ireland, not that many, just start up and just disappeared, you know, due to some of them like probably not managed that well, and some of them is because they're associated with, you know, third level or something, and the person that leaves is left, and whoever's champion that just left and no one else took over and it disappeared, you know, those kind of things. So it's great to see a space like this, like people ask, like, where can I find a space like Tog in my area? I said, talk to people. Like nowadays with libraries and, you know, providing kind of wanting their own maker spaces or wanted to provide these services as well. So start off there, you know, and get a group together. Then you might be able to get more and more people who are like-minded, and then you can actually branch out to something bigger, you know, having your own space.
The design patterns were a very useful document to build off of. The 2+2 pattern, you know, everybody kind of brings two people. But even within the current events that we try and organize in Tog, is that if one person is really interested in, you know, hosting lock picking, or one person is interested in the electronics, like, we know that one person is enough to run the organization, even on that kind of, sorry, not run the organization, but even just to organize that one event, that regular one event, you need 2, 3, 4, 5 people at least to get, you know, going. Many of the hackerspaces around Ireland that we've seen, they kind of tend to be, they didn't have that core group of 4 or 5 people.
So reliant on the one, really, or something, isn't it?
We're interested in doing the mundane management stuff, making sure the bins get put out and are collected.
Yeah,
you know, the bills get paid.
Those are important. It's not just having fun. Cleaned.
Toilet is occasionally cleaned, or the tuck shop is filled up. There's a lot of these unglamorous things that have to be done that you have to twist somebody's arm to do, usually, you know.
So let's talk a bit about your making, Robert, and how you got into it. I know you, as you said previously, you have a background in community wireless and building some electronics for them, but how did you get started in electronics and making in general?
It's kind of hard. It's something I've been doing for so long. It's kind of hard to think about what was the initiating thing. I think I probably took apart my toys as a child, you know, just that it's wanting to understand how things worked, you know, getting into computers at a relatively young age in the, you know, the mid-90s. I'd have generally had technical interests. I was never particularly into sports. Those kind of general stereotypes, but I wasn't particularly academic. I did prefer more doing things with my hands in school, like woodwork and building construction. I experienced something new. I kind of, oh, I'm interested. Let me dive into that, whether it was radio. So you try and figure out how radio works. You know, oh, electronics is related to radio. Well, how does electronics work? How does casting or I would see a material or have some sort of in on a topic and then allow myself to explore that topic. I think that's probably it. I don't think there's a clear, this is where I became a maker kind of moment, you know.
So how did it progress from that to going to maker events? How did it go from, you know, repairing things, taking things apart, to going to these kind of large scale maker events, celebrations of maker culture?
I think the maker community in Ireland and even around the world, in hindsight, is so fragmented. It's very rarely that you're going to find somebody that is into the same things as you in your next door, you know, street or in the village or in the town, and potentially even the city. And and as I kind of tended to specialize on topics, I realized the people I needed to interact with weren't readily available. And even in some senses, the people that are my kind of colleagues in TOG, fellow members in TOGs, aren't into the same things that I'm in. So you kind of go beyond that. But I think some of this was just like the idea of one of the first experiences of kind of hacking and making culture was a big event like 25C3. Mm. Your mind is blown by going to your first event.
How big was that first event you went to, first CCC?
How big was it?
Like, yeah, your first
event. I think there were issues with that location in the Berlin Convention Center. I think it had a limit of about 3,000 to 4,000 people.
Still huge, coming from Ireland, when we like our usual conferences are not that big. At the time, we didn't even have convention centers way back then. You know, we're probably thinking like, you know, hotels and then Croke Park or something. You know, like there's nothing in the middle. But for conferences that we tend to go to, that like a couple thousand people like that, a few thousand, it would have been very overwhelming. Especially with a lot of cool things, you know, you want to go to everything. It's your first time.
Yeah. I kind of actually thinking a little bit about, I think it's some of the, I got a lot about the need for a community from the wireless project, community wireless projects, Dublin Wide Area Network and the Irish equivalent of these. The general idea was we'll use Wi-Fi to make an internet backbone of our own. Mm-hmm. So we would climb up on roofs, install antennas, go to meetings, share equipment, share knowledge, travel down the country to meet up with other people that were doing something similar. So I think it was probably the idea of knowing that you might need to travel or have some sort of nucleus of contact. You know, your neighbor isn't going to be into the same thing you are. You're going to have to look further afield, and welcoming that, you know, traveling. And even I was into gaming for a while, and it was my clan. We traveled to, you know, another country. So, and I guess I did work abroad for a while as well. Or lived abroad for a while as well. So needing to travel, knowing, having had the ability to travel in the past and not be afraid to do that, helped.
Do you remember your, because I know you go to a lot of maker fairs, you know, I think through Jeffrey. Jeffrey goes to a lot of maker fairs as well. Do you remember your first one?
It was in the Newcastle, the UK Maker Fair in the Life Centre in Newcastle.
What did you think? Did you think like, we should really have one of these in Ireland? or are you saying, oh, I want to go to more of these and see what's, or did you, or did it wow you or not, or say, hey, I'm going to go to bigger ones and see, because there's maker fairs, but were there many maker fairs back then, or was it just all maker fairs?
At the time, it was just all maker fairs. This was before they adopted the licensing model.
Yeah.
I guess I went in a slightly different direction. Jeffrey was involved in bringing in Dublin Mini Maker Fair, and that's now Dublin Maker. I went more as a maker.
Yeah.
I think I went the day before, so it was a Saturday and Sunday event, and I went over on the Friday and then heard about this UK bunch of hackspace people, and I went to a drinks night before then. I met 50 other makers, you know, where Tog at the time had 20 people involved, mm-hmm. maybe. Mm-hmm. And there was like, maybe not 50, might have been an exaggeration, but there was at least 10 other hack spaces represented. And I was there on my own. I said, hi, I'm Robert from Ireland, and awkwardly, and kind of. Then the Nottingham Hackspace people effectively, you know, put me under their wing, and I had just bought a visitor ticket to go to that fair, and I ended up kind of going in with the Nottingham Hackspace guys, going in through the back entrance and helping them. They were helping Mitch Altman and I think Jimmy Rogers doing an iConsulter type badge, or you know my iController badge.
Yeah.
They had a version of that, a precursor version of that. And I spent the whole weekend teaching people to solder.
Can you tell the listeners what it is? You know, I know
what the iController badge is. Yeah. So it's a small printed circuit board, small battery, and a small self-flashing LED. And when you solder all those bits together, you have a badge that flashes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it goes RGB, then it mixes yellow, cyan, magenta, and just kind of goes through that.
Yeah. It's a great my first soldering project, I suppose. Someone never held a soldering on it.
And I basically kind of said, oh my God, I basically stole the idea. And I've been using it for my own, what I call it, an icon solder badge that I've been selling, you know, for the last 10 years.
Mm.
I realized looking up my numbers that Park Fusion started in 2009. So it's almost as long as the Tog Hackerspace. I came back home and kind of says, oh, I really want to figure out how to make my own version of this as a kind of a kit. And I did that. And I think we used it in a number of the Tog events. We did it through the Dublin Maker, the very earlier Dublin Maker events, like a learn to solder area, activity area. And then after that, I think my next Maker Fair was the my first kind of big international Maker Fair then was the New York Maker Fair.
That must have been huge.
Yeah. So that's a 10, 20,000 visitor event.
Yeah.
But it was a bit of a 2-for-1 type of event in that couple of days before was the Open Hardware Summit, the first Open Hardware Summit.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was an event about people who are making hardware devices, a bit like Arduinos, and then making them open source, promoting that information. So I went as the Open Hardware Summit. I bought a ticket to attend as a punter to the Maker Fair. And then I kind of ended up volunteering for that whole weekend doing more learn to solder badge kits. You know, I was involved in teaching 1,500 people to solder that weekend.
Whoa.
I was doing kind of 10 people at a time, you know, showing them how to use a solder iron safely. And also I think as part of that, Jeffrey asked me to go to a Maker Faire producers event. Jeffrey wasn't able to attend that year. And so I kind of went to that to get a feeling of what might be happening because I think Jeffrey and David Cowan and a couple of the guys had expressed an interest in doing something around hosting our own event. There was a just like Hackerspaces kind of massively blew up in that time period, so did the Maker Faire Maker Faire Light type events at the same time.
Cool. So Jeffrey, it was about the same time, wasn't it? So everything kind of sort of gelled together around that period.
Yeah, very much there was a boom in interest in people doing all these kind of DIY activities, and you know, the birth of sharing things on YouTube and Twitter, and the tooling came down a lot in cost. You had cheaper PCBs being available, you had cheaper microcontrollers, you know, the tool chains became more open source to really lower the barrier to entry for people to get into this type of making.
For those who are lucky enough to have a hackerspace in their locale, it's great to be able to pop in. And even if they don't have some of the equipment, they can actually learn how to, you know, do some of the stuff as well. So that's pretty cool. And, you know, Talk has, like, so much cool stuff in there. A lot of some dangerous stuff, but still cool.
That's what makes it cool.
Cool and dangerous go together.
So maybe you can tell our listeners how these events have changed over the period that you've been going to them, how they've grown. I know you've been to the flagship one in Bay Area. Is that very different than the smaller scale ones you go to in Germany or Berlin? Or how these different events, I guess, have grown over time and each formed their own kind of character?
Yeah, so I think I'm totting up the numbers. I think I've been to 35 kind of Maker Faire events, including the 6 or 7 Dublin Maker events. Yeah, like everyone is different because they're relying, because what is just as important about the makers is the visitor, the community that you're providing entertainment to, who attend. Because I have knowledge of going as a maker, and then also kind of secondhand knowledge through Jeffrey and like Vicky and the Dublin Maker team, you're kind of seeing both sides of the event. Or there's three sides of the event. There's the punter, there's the maker, and then there's the producer kind of sides of the event. Many of the bigger events can be much more commercial. You know, they're going as the big sponsors, Intel, Atmel, DigiKey, Mouser. There's a whole rake of these kind of commercial makers. And then there's the pure kind of craft maker. They're just somebody local doing a really interesting craft. Most of the makers that kind of go to Dublin Maker would probably fall into that kind of pure kind of craft. This is the hobby I do. I'm going to show it, whether they do it individually or as a small group or a collective. And then there's this kind of middle ground of people who are semi-professional makers, or maybe somebody from a university, that they're not there to sell a product. They're just selling their, they're not there to sell a product. They're there to sell the experience of what they do, to try and promote the community. That it's not like, I want to sell this thing. No, it's here's a thing we do. You can come and do it with us. You know, come to our university, or you know, come to our workshop and do things. Todd probably, when Todd goes, we probably fall into that middle ground category, where we're trying to get people to come and visit our space, but we're not necessarily trying to sell a product on the day, or you know, and we're not there just to show this is the something we do. Like one of our members might go from the homebrew group, might come and you know, show this is the kind of stuff I do in the hackerspace. On the bigger events, the big commercial events can overpower the feel sometimes of the Maker Faire. You know, you have these big corporate sponsors. Like Maker Faires are an expensive event to run. Sorry, Dublin Maker Fairs are a very expensive event to run. You guys know that. I know that from talking with you guys. Yeah. Many of the fairs I have are ticketed. Dublin Makers free. But the big corporate sponsors tend to get the big pavilions. They bring in their hundreds of thousands of euros, stands, you know.
So it's a completely different feel than is it? It's like, but there must be some still a bit of community spirit through it all, because I assume that the bigger the event is, you know, the more you need sponsorships, and that's why all the big companies are there. And it's a great eye, you know, catches the eye, but as I say, kind of overpowers a lot of the, say, the from the hobbyist to people who are actually making, you know, start, who has their own small little business, you know, from the skills acquired from making. So I can see there's like, it's like a double-edged sword, isn't it? You know, you want to make it bigger, but yes, you know, you need the funds, and the only funds is you need the big corporates, but then you need to try and keep the community spirit and feel by including all the community as well. Yeah, and I can see, you know, the Bay Area one, I've never been, but I've seen videos, and they have, you know, famous personalities show off, like Adam Savage, and just, you know, have a whole key, have like big talk, just chatting to people, and it's fantastic, you know, to have these giant contraptions, and you know, that's like a big draw. Well, probably won't be able to afford an Adam Savage over here, but you know, it's kind of like, he's up there as a celebrity, but he's also, to me, like also a very big community person. And you know, to me, that's like, oh, if only we can get to that sort of stage but still keep the community spirit, you know.
I think the community is there, like it's the, you know, nobody would go to a big corporate event. Anytime I've talked to a maker, fair producer, because sometimes you'll have them come in, you know, if you go to a big event like in Rome Maker Fair, the European Maker Fair, many, many times people from other fairs kind of, can you come to my event? You know, oh, I wish we could get Adam Savage or somebody to come. And I kind of said, no, it's much more important to focus on your local making community. Mm. Like the thing that sticks out in my mind is that we had in one of the very first Dublin Maker events, we had a net maker. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you call it knitting a net or something like that, but like that kind of skill, you were never going to see it. Bay Area
it's
maker
kind of
fair.
unique.
There's unique Irish culture.
Yeah. It came down from Donegal.
Yeah. And I think as a producer, it's kind of interesting, is how do you encourage those people to return, to keep coming to the maker fair? I don't know how you guys answer that. You know, you put out your open call and hopefully people come in. But it's also important for me as a maker to bring new stuff to the fair or to Dublin Maker.
How do you all do it? Like, you go to so many maker fairs, like even when it was like the Berlin one was cancelled. So, and Jeffrey asked me, like, do you want to go to Berlin? I go, okay. He said, oh, crap. And I was like, you know, I was just going to have a look around and say, no, you're going to be a maker. I say, oh, crap, double crap. Because I'm not that kind. I am more logistics organizer person. Yeah. I like doing things, supporting things, but as in showcasing stuff is like terrifying for me. So I did create a project. I did make one. It wasn't like, you know, I'm just like knowing that every year there's like a say even here at Dublin Maker, I know there's always a grand rush. Yeah. Emergency, we're trying to get a project finished for a Dublin Maker. But how do people, like, how do you do it? Like, I know there's an annual one for people, and people are already rushing trying to make a project for an annual event, but how do you do it, like, for going to so many different, you know, maker fairs or maker events, or, you know, even conferences and things like that?
But the schedule is that there's one maker fair in a city every year. So you can bring the same project in one year. You can show that same project, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 times.
Do you have a time to walk around? If you're at the makers,
Rarely. But I get it. But it's what I get out of the maker fair is different to what you as a producer gets out of it and what the visitor gets out of it. Like the visitor is there for entertainment.
Mm.
Realistic, and that's something I've only kind of more realized more recently. The person that comes to Dublin Maker on the Saturday for hopefully sunny day in the summer is going there to entertain themselves and their kids, you know. They're not necessarily coming to learn a new skill, you know, ask a particular question. They're just coming for an entertaining afternoon or going to another event, another city, you know, they might 2-day tickets, you know, entertained for a couple of two or three days. As a maker, I find the maker fair useful for giving me a deadline. I know with the COVID lock-ins and all that kind of stuff, I have no deadline. I can't do anything.
What I did with the Berlin one, even though it was cancelled, I said, right, I did it anyway for that date. And I wrote a blog post about it. I did it. It's not quite complete, but I did it. So I think probably that's one way of doing it. Find all the proposed maker fair deadlines, the ones that you go to, and say, okay, I'm going to make that project and do it for that one. Because I did it for Berlin, and I said, I've started it. I'm not going to leave it like my other little projects. I want to get this done, and I want to write something about it as well. So that was one way of getting around that for me anyway.
I think the other thing that's very important as a maker going to a Dublin Maker event or similar is a large percentage of the audience are going for entertainment. The makers that are also going to be entertained but are more inquisitive, that's a much smaller percentage of the are interested in the process. So if you haven't finished your project, that doesn't matter, because most of the time somebody will look at your project that's finished and ask you, how does it work? Enough people will, you know,
I think that's why we keep trying to tell people, saying, you know, do, even if you in the open call, do put in your project, which you know yourself, you've seen our messages out telling people, just put in your ideas. Even if it's just an idea, it's a work in progress, it's not completed, because it is quite interesting, because you're there, you know, saying this is like not quite finished, and then people kind of follow on questions, so what are you going to do to finish it, you know, or how did you get to this stage, and what is it doing now, and oh, you hit across a problem, maybe they're the ones who have a solution for you, you don't know.
Absolutely.
You know, it's the banter, isn't it? It's the talk between you. Just keep talking. You go, oh, why didn't I think of that? You know, or it could be coming someone saying, hey, can I help you in your project? Because I'm really interested and I have the skills as well that maybe we can partner on this.
Yeah, that definitely happens loads of times. You'll be easily, you know, providing entertainment. Then you'll have an hour conversation with somebody. You know, about the intricacies of what you're doing, what they're doing, you know, a useful piece of information, inspiration for new ideas, how to take your project in a different direction. That all comes through, as you say, in this kind of banter mode. The other thing that happens is that you interact with other makers through either when you go and talk to the makers, or in the early morning or late evening, you know, during teardown and setup, you can get around and you can talk with a maker. A number of the bigger events have events like Bring a Hack. They organize to meet up in a bar or a restaurant, and makers come and bring something, bring a little, bring some of their project or bring a piece of their that they find interesting to act as a stimulating conversation piece. So those events are really, really useful to attend.
What you're saying is we should try and have one of those here as well. I know you had one recently, last year, wasn't it? 2019, like Tog hosted it, and Jeffrey
we partnered with Hackaday for that.
Yeah, the super conferences and Hackaday, But even the TOG, it's one of the things where I've always, you know, from the very early days, is pushed for TOG to host the kind of makers barbecue that Dublin Maker help with that. Give the makers an opportunity to talk to other makers, because you don't really get a lot of it during the event. The bar on the Saturday night. Ideally, the maker will come and stay for a little bit longer than just come, present, and go.
Yeah, yeah.
You lose a huge amount by doing that. And it's one of the advantages of the international events is that you're basically stuck in that city. You know, if we'd gone to Berlin this year, we would have hung around with all the people, other makers.
I was looking forward to it. I was waiting for you to bring me around to, because when I was there, I only been to Berlin once before, and that was a very touristy one. Yeah. And then Jeffrey was telling me, but I've never done any of the touristy stuff. I've just been doing that. So I said, okay, this time around, I can still catch up on some of the touristy stuff, but I definitely want to, you know, hang on to you two, because you know where all the cool hacker spaces are, and you know, Michael wants to go as well. So, you know, I was really looking for it. So next time, you know, wherever it is, definitely, you know, if you're going, so I'm going to tag along and try to find, like, show me all these cool spaces, you know?
I think the clearest thing is that you get the most out of these events by the non-scheduled parts.
Yeah.
You know, the
and really how friendly you are and how kind of outgoing you are. Like if you stay quiet the whole time at your stands, then you'll be back in your hotel having a quiet evening.
It's really hard though, isn't it, if you're a quiet person?
but it's a bit like the bring a hack thing. Is the fact that you have something, you're very unlikely to go to a maker fair event unless you want to talk about your project.
Yeah.
Why would you bother, you know, traveling to another city or whatever? And even the big corporate people seem to get a lot out of the big corporate events and stuff.
Yeah. Like
that. They seem to get a lot out of this kind of unstructured networking that happens. Yeah. And it might be a conversation that you have while, you know, during your 9 to 5 on the stand kind of thing. Yeah. But
it's just like whatever, I think in offices or in conferences where you your best conversation is always in the hallway, outside the talks, outside your meetings, outside your, you know, your day-to-day stuff, but it's where you make your coffee or it's where you're getting coffee in conferences. You know, you just happen to, you know, just stand and you just bump into someone and all the good conversations start, and there's nothing to do with what's happening, say that talk or, you know, that workshop or that demo or something like that. And sometimes great ideas come out of that as well. You know, you build up your contacts as well, especially with people with different skills and experiences.
Yeah, I think even for people who are much more introverted, and I class myself as a very introverted person, you get used to it, and the events tend to be, you're not talking to. It's not like doing a conference where you're the speaker up on the stage and, you know, 50, 100 people, 2,000 people are staring at you.
Yeah.
The conversations tend to be almost one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
Or 1 to 5 people, like it's a family group.
Yeah.
To save your throat is better to talk to a group, but, you know, your conversations tend to be much more one-to-one.
Mm-hmm.
You're one of 50 people providing, you know, 5 or 10 minutes of entertainment to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I happily recommend to most people. You know, that if you have a project and you like to promote it, attending an event like Dublin Maker Faire is going to be a worthwhile experience.
Because you're going to get lots of people asking you questions and you go, oh yeah. Or you know, they're not suggesting, but saying, why doesn't it do that? I go, or just asking you, because then you can go through the, you know, and you're explaining how you did, and you realize you put a lot of work in your project, because you're so close to the project that, you know, you just get it done. But then you know it's a lot of work, but when you talk to someone, you go through the process and showing how it's done, you know, it kind of gives you more clarity. an amount of, you know, input you did for that project. And also when you start explaining to people and their eyes light up and start asking more questions.
Yeah, for me, it's a feedback cycle.
Yeah.
You know, that you don't get when you're just doing it yourself. You know, if I'm just working on my, for example, I was making figurines at home.
Yeah.
You know, I can be as good as the best figurine maker in the world, but, you know, I'm just entertaining myself at home. But
mm-hmm.
And I think especially if a community in Ireland or in that city is small, it's a great way to grow it.
Mm.
You know, you find somebody from a different maker grouping and they say, well, actually this material you can get over here in this store.
Mm.
You can inspire people. Like I think that's some of the best thing is when somebody sees your thing and it just clicks, it's like, wow, I can do that too. Because nothing, like I've no special training or anything. Mm. I just allow myself to take an idea and run with it. The community feeds back and say, well, that's, you know, not a good thing, or that's a good thing, or, you know, why don't you try it this way?
Like similarly, when I've been doing, you know, a few of these podcasts, talking to so different people, actually talking to Mary Plunkett from National Print Museum, got so many tips off her. I was talking to her about, you know, that open source print press that you can print out, 3D print out. And it's one of the things to use before you can print anything is your carton, milk carton or your orange juice carton. And inside it should be foil lined. There's no foil lined containers nowadays. I've been looking at all the juice containers that I have, and I said I can't find anything. And she was giving me tips on what to use instead, you know, and different what kind of inks to go and buy, and you know, because I kind of like art as well. So I started to go into my my art geeky side of me, and I start asking lots of questions. These kind of things. And as you talk to different types of makers with different people with different experience, vast amount of experience, as you say, someone said, oh, you should use this. You know, don't use that. Don't do that. That mightn't work. And I think with Dublin Maker, we're trying to bring, you know, a lot of these people, different people with different experience together. Because when people think of Dublin Maker, I think people still think of 3D printers. Yeah. And they keep, and we're trying to kind of broaden, you know, that there is a, especially nowadays with technologies and creativity, they overlap a lot, you know. So, and there's so many things you can do with all these diverse skills, and you don't know what can come out of it, you know. Some might have amazing project from if there are kids in schools, you know, to, you know, and if you're doing it as a hobby, or maybe it's an idea for your own, you know, that might end up as your own business, might form into your own business, which would be amazing. Or even like, I suppose a lot of these exhibits, some way to, you know, get people to say, oh, I can actually try and make something like this at home.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of the projects, you know, people can make at home, but obviously the more kind of advanced ones, you know, they have to know, then they have to ask, how do I learn how to, first of all, solder? Or how do I find out more about how to do electronics? Where do I go? I think that's the place where you bring all these people together. Like, say, you know, even knitting and crocheting, where do I start? How do I go? I know there's like YouTube videos and stuff, but some people just like, where do I go? What do I get? You know, so from traditional right up to high tech skills, or and then hands-on skills, you know, it's a place where, you know, a lot of people can go and get advice and tips from as well. Yeah. And then even just looking from afar, even if the visitors feel like, oh, that looks really cool and it looks doable, it's something that will get their minds thinking, you know, and they look up and trying to, you're bringing that curiosity out of people. That's where all the asking and the feedback and the banter, as well as you want that to follow them back. You want the kids to go home and start to keep banging on those pans and keep making stuff and making keep that creativity going, you know, instead of it's ended, you know, I'm just gonna go home now. But you want to keep that creativity
it's completely okay to make something out of cardboard and sticky tape.
Yeah.
You know, that, or it doesn't need to have an Arduino in it to be interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to have a battery, you know.
Yeah.
But also, combining a piece of cardboard with something in an Arduino is going to, you know, but people are interested in what you're doing.
Hmm.
You know, you should present it anyway.
Hmm.
And if you figure out what people aren't interested in, well, talk to people and figure out, well, what skills you do know and how you can adapt for the next year to, you know, or you kind of find another maker there and you kind of say as well, I know how to knit and you know how to do woodwork.
Yeah.
Can we combine our talents?
Yeah.
You know, to make a spinning machine, because I've always wanted to spin my own, you know, yarns and stuff like that. Like it's, you know, the visitor gets something. The makers should also be trying to get something out of the fair too. You're not going to go to a maker fair, and are very unlikely to go to a Dublin maker event or whatever and sell a load of your bespoke key rings. That's not kind of why you go to that. People aren't going there necessarily to spend your money. You're better off going to a design fair in your audience or something. But what you can do is go there and interact with the an audience that is partly also makers. Who might take, well, actually, I don't really just want to buy a keyring. Will you show me how to make a keyring? You know, here's, you know, instead of charging 20 euros for your materials, it's a 5 euro kind of, or it's a free, you know, make a keyring out of cardboard.
I think it's also a good way to see, I think with the Dublin Maker, it's great being free, even though it's still in Dublin, but it's quite accessible because it's free. You don't need to have tickets.
Yeah.
You wander in, you could be walking a dog, that's fine. Just go and have a check and talk to people if you know, and look what's going on. But then, you know, seeing a lot of the different exhibits, you know, you can, it's just, for me, it was like, it's kind of, you just want to ask, how did you make it? What did you come up with the idea? You know, you just wonder in your head, can you make that at home? It looks doable. You know, it's the main thing about, it's just trying to make it friendly. And at the end of the day, and that's what the makers are all there. They want to share. They wanted to talk to people. They want to show their excitement and why it's great to take apart your toys or take apart your stuff. It's and also, why not? You know, if you have broken radios, you should, you know, maybe we should all learn how to, you know, be more sustainable and not just keep buying consumer products. Learn how to fix some of them, you know, things like that. Of course, you know, as I said, that's where Dublin Maker comes in. It's great to be, you know, a spot where there's people with so many different experiences, where you can actually go and talk to someone about electronics, go and talk to someone about different crafts, or just talk to someone. There might be some colleges there, you know, you can talk to someone in museums. It's like so many different flavors of different communities there, and different services are provided, and it's all free. You know, just go up and talk. And
it really fills up your kind of enthusiasm for the whole year. You know, you get inspired to go on and make your projects.
Actually, something that's coming to mind there that the Dublin Maker might be able to help facilitate is you guys have a database of communities.
Yeah.
You know, that is that somehow, is how do you, you know, to, these are all of around the country, these are all of the knitting groups, these are all of the...
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out a best way to show that in a digital format.
But even in a physical, I know at some of the UK events, what they do is they do a map.
Yeah.
And they ask hackerspaces to
put
their tag on the map.
Yeah.
Is there something that, you know, somebody can do that like it's more work for you guys. It's
more like I think it's more I can like doing for me doing the work is not a problem. It's more how to keep that up to date with having everyone owning it. So it's for me, I would love to have this as a crowd sourced way of everyone making sure their own little bit is up to date. But you know how this goes. People still never keep their details up to date. If they somehow the project they're on or the not-for-profit organization they're on somehow disappears because they have moved country and because they're working in a different job and a different contract or not doing that anymore.
But I'm wondering if that is almost making it too difficult on yourself. It's in that maybe it is just make a map and just have people put their
street map.
Well, no, just even a physical, map of the city kind of laser cut or something, and like a pegboard or something. People could just stick a pin in.
That'd be a really cool project for a Double Maker, no?
Yeah, exactly. Just, like maybe it's something, print out something big
and just put it there and then say, hey, if you're an organization, pin it. And then
I think what they do is they put a pin in and then they have a string and you can bring the string over to, your name or,
that'd be really cool.
Card or something like that. You know,
that would be a good snapshot to start off with anyway.
Exactly. You just do it and it's maybe you try and get all the makers to put their pin in at the beginning, but then the visitors can start putting, my organization is here or.
Yeah. That's a great idea, actually. Has it been done before?
There is something around the UK Hackerspaces, EMF Camp and things. They do something along a bit like that.
Mm. I think we should do something like that.
But the audience going to something like EMF Camp is going to be somewhat different to the public event.
Mm.
Where that's almost like a maker event. The one negative and the kind of it's counterpoint. It's a positive of this of Double Maker being a one day event that you have potentially to do. You have the possibility to do something on a Sunday
because of all the makers that are around.
You do a public event in Marion Square or wherever on the Saturday.
Yeah,
but then on the Sunday, you do effectively a closed door event somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that it doesn't have to be that you're going to show your maker fair. It is just a makers networking event.
Yeah. Because everyone has traveled all the way over and it's a good opportunity for majority of them to stick around to talk to each other because they just did not get a chance because that Saturday, you're just wrecked at night in the bar. You just want to have food, just want to have your pint and just chill. And then, and Sunday is a good opportunity to get all the folks together to like, okay, show us your project or let's try to work through a short workshop together, making something, things like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of...
It's hard to structure. It's hard to know how to structure because, I've done multi-day events, I've done the Bring a Hacks and stuff like that.
I think we still want to do our hacking Ireland camping thing here.
Gale hack.
Yeah, it hasn't taken. Has I think everyone's just been so busy. But it's just maybe even a small version of that without the camping side.
I think you're better off doing a renting somewhere type of thing.
Yeah.
To host an event.
Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely certainly something missing for the makers. It's not just pure entertainment. It's literally knowledge exchange, helping each other, sharing, and also just connecting because a lot of people haven't seen each other. Some of them are come by, or some of them might have followed each other on social media or seen each other in other international events, but never see each other here in Ireland. Is a good opportunity in the time just flew. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna wrap up.
Sure.
And thank you for coming aboard and speaking with us. That was a lot of fun. If you have anything to to kind of promote, like shout out?
So I have a YouTube channel under Part Fusion, and I'm also Part Fusion on Twitter. They're probably the two places I have social interactions at. If anybody has any questions or want to follow up, I have a partfusion.com website, but that's very out of date.
Or if people want to find you, they can
probably at a Dublin Maker event coming soon.
And TOG.
Or a TOG.
Because I bump into you every so often in TOG as well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been there to, because of the lockdown and stuff. But
yeah. Slowly it'll open up. But you're still like, your TOG is like hosting stuff as well. But it's one way people can also find you as well,
yeah,
as another way.
So the TOG Hackerspace on normal times is open multiple days a week to public events for lockpicking, crafting, electronics nights. We used to have a regular social event.
Yeah.
Third Saturday of the month.
Yeah.
But you can find out more on the TOG.ie website. There's a calendar there.
So keep an eye on TOG.ie. And if you need to, you know, ask Rob any questions about TOG and also Part Fusion, do check it out. And you said you have a YouTube channel as well.
Yeah,
cool, check you out on YouTube. And remember to hit subscribe to our podcast. We are also on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. So take care and stay safe. And this is Vicky signing off from the Dublin Maker podcast.